Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We're going to continue with our candidate forum series. And tonight we have on the phone with us Congressman Jim Renacci, who will be running for the U.S. Senate in the primary, the May 7th primary. This year there are some contested races as we head into the primary season, and then, of course, the general election. And Ohio will have a battleground state race for the U.S. Senate, that is for sure. With us on the phone again is Jim Renacci. Again, he is the current congressman of the 16th District. And just recently, Jim was considering running for governor, but then he has a little story to tell us about what has happened as there was a shakeup in the Senate primary, and now he is running for the U.S. Senate. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks, Jim, for joining us, and we appreciate you taking time. Let's talk about that a little bit, because this has been an interesting year for you, as you, of course, have served in the 16th Congressional District for 7.5 years now. And then, of course, you were considering running for governor for the state of Ohio, but something else happened along the way. Tell us a little bit about that.
For sure, Chris. Well, I think for your listeners, they first should know that I was in the business world for almost 3 decades, moved to Ohio 35 years ago in February. Started my first business, grew one business to 60 businesses, created over 1,500 jobs, and employed over 3,000 people. I was always a big believer in giving back to my community. I was a firefighter. I was on the Board of Zoning Appeals, the Planning Commission, all of those things. And really, national public service never was something that I was considering until one day my dealership was taken away from me. I had a General Motors dealership in 2009. General Motors was taken over by the federal government. I called my congressman at the time because my dealership was selected to be closed. 53 employees were going to lose their job. I asked for help. He said he would give me help until the day that there was a vote on the House floor to reinstate my dealership. And then he voted against it. I ended up losing the dealership. I called him up, told him he lied to me. I was going to remove him from that office. I thought that was just a threat on basic business in Ohio. And 14 months later, I became the U.S. Congressman. So I have been here just over 7 years and was coming back home, had decided that I could serve now that I had given up almost my entire business portfolio this last 7 years. I thought I could serve best as governor, because I do know our state is failing in many ways, and started a campaign for governor in March of last year, had gotten all throughout the state talking about the things I wanted to do for the state. And then on January 5th of this year, as many of you know, Josh Mandel announced he was stepping down from the Senate race. His wife, and again, my thoughts and prayers are to him and his family and his wife. Yeah. With her illness. I got contacted by many people asking me to get in the race. I said that I had no interest. I was going to continue to run for governor. I told people that the only thing that could change my mind was a call from the president in the White House. And a few days later, I got a call to come see the president in the White House. We talked about this race. We talked about the importance of it. He asked me to get in. He wanted me to run against Sherrod Brown. And again, after some prayer and discussion with my wife, we jumped into the Senate race. So that's the reason I am now in the Senate race. I tell people, Chris, that sometimes leadership's not about what you want to do. It's about what you have to do. And this was a call from the president. This was a call to duty. And it was a call that I accepted. And again, I don't care if the president was Democrat or Republican. I do believe when you get a call from the president, you have to at least take the call and listen to his request, and that's what I did.
Okay, very good. Well, that's a great explanation of what has happened, because obviously it's been a little bit of a whirlwind for you, and now you're off and running, of course, in the U.S. Senate race. Let's talk about that for a little bit. And again, you've already covered some of this, but I guess the question is, as you're running for the U.S. Senate race, and let's go to the next question then. What, in your opinion, is the biggest problem in Washington right now?
Well, I say this is the problem in Washington and in politics all along. It's career politicians. Too often politicians worry about the next election, not the next generation. And they make their decisions based on worrying about getting reelected. The good thing for me was that I came here. I was able to come to Ohio as a poor kid from Western Pennsylvania, started my first business with just a few hundred dollars, lived the American dream, and now I'm able to give back to my state and to my country. Too many times politicians here in Washington come down here, they live here their entire career. That is their career. They need that paycheck, and they make decisions based on the next election, not the next generation. I've said all along, the best thing that I can bring to Washington is that I don't need the paycheck. This is not my profession. I am a businessman. I've been a businessman for almost three decades, and my only reason for coming here was because career politicians decided to take my Chevy dealership away from me. So that's the number one issue in any, whether it's state, federal, city. After being here for 7 years, we have to start realizing we can't continue to elect career politicians because they're worried about the next election, not the next generation.
We're talking with Jim Renacci, who is the current congressman of the 16th Congressional District, but is a candidate for the U.S. Senate race. The May 7th primary is coming up quickly, and then, of course, the general election later this year, and you will face off against Sherrod Brown, the winner of that primary. So if you do win the primary, Jim, and you face off against Sherrod Brown, what are your points of contention with Senator Sherrod Brown and his time in Washington?
Well, let's face it, Sherrod Brown has been in politics. He started in 1974. I was a sophomore in high school when Sherrod Brown first ran for election. He's been in elected office his entire life, except for 4 years when he was defeated in one election. But during those four years, he ran for Congress. So he is the epitome of a career politician, somebody who has lived his entire life since he was 18 years old in politics. The difference is that, and he'll say that he's an individual who's for the blue collar union voter. I am the blue collar union. I grew up in a blue collar union family. My father was a railroad worker. My mother was a nurse. I paid my way through college by working three jobs. And I'm going to make sure that the people of Ohio realize that. I understand what it is to work hard and do the right thing. I went to a small school because that's all I could afford. I was absolutely shocked when I looked at a little bit of Sherrod Brown's background. He's the son of a doctor. He went to Yale, and he's been in politics his entire life. I'm the son of a railroad worker. I went to IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, paid my own way, and I've been in business my entire life. That will be the difference between Sherrod Brown and Jim Renacci. But the next question I'll always ask is, are you better off today? After all the years that Sherrod Brown has served in Ohio, which is almost 40 plus years, are you better off today than you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago? And I think the answer is Ohio is struggling, and a lot of it's because of the policies of these career politicians, including Sherrod Brown.
You know, that's a great point, Jim, you bring up, because Ohio does lag behind. So for instance, right now, the economy is starting to get on the move nationally, and we can see wages rising. We can see companies investing across the country in various states, but yet Ohio is still lagging behind. It's even competing with some of its border states for businesses moving into them, but we still have some impediments here in Ohio. One of them, of course, is a tax structure. The other is we don't have right to work, and other states have right to work, Michigan, Indiana, West Virginia, and Kentucky. And, you know, analysts and economists say that in right to work states, people who are in the urban areas, they actually have higher wages, that there's jobs accessibility. So, what, you know, you look at Ohio and it's lagging behind, even currently right now, our state treasury is behind on its receipts. And, you know, and unemployment numbers are ticking up here where they're going down across the country. What do you think from Washington, what you can do to actually help Ohio and its economic future.
Well, Chris, it's interesting because as I ran for governor, I got to know a lot about Ohio. But remember, the best lessons I've got in Ohio was being a businessman in Ohio for almost three decades. When I travel to Ohio, the best example I can give you is Procter & Gamble was moving 1,500 jobs from Cincinnati to West Virginia. And I met with them and asked them why they were leaving. They said, number one, the regulatory climate is bad in Ohio. Number two, the tax climate is bad in Ohio. Number three, the energy climate is bad in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And number four is right to work. So they brought up four issues, which I made the pillars of my governor's campaign. But those are also the pillars of what I can do in Washington. Let's face it, we were able to get a tax bill through that I supported, which is going to help Ohio businesses grow and prosper. Sherrod Brown did not vote for that. Regulatory bills, we passed a number of bills eliminating regulations for Ohio businesses. Sherrod Brown did not vote for those. When it comes to energy, I'm a big believer in all in the above, including our coal and our oil and gas in Ohio. So we need to remove those barriers, those federal barriers, so that our state can grow and prosper. And again, right to work, as you mentioned, I've said even as a governor, we have to look at that. We can't have every state around us right to work. Now, that's a state issue. But in the end, I do think it's the opportunity to make sure that we can compete with other states. And as a senator, I can help get the Trump agenda moving forward, which I think is important.
Well, that was my next question. What is the number one thing you would seek to do if elected to the U.S. Senate this November? If you win the primary and you win the November election, what is the number one thing that you want to do as Ohio's new U.S. Senator?
Well, the one thing I can tell you, Chris, is I have the best relationship out of all candidates with President Trump. Just last week, I flew into Cincinnati on Air Force One with President Trump. He's a big supporter of me. I was a big supporter of him. In Cincinnati, he said specifically he wants Jim Renacci to be the next senator. He wants Jim. He kept saying, get in there, Jim. We need you to win this race. We need you to beat Sherrod Brown. I will bring, as a senator, a relationship which we don't have with Ohio right now. The president does not have a very good relationship with Ohio because there's confrontation with our governor. Many of the statewide elected officials did not support President Trump when he was candidate Trump. Many of the congressional leaders did not support President Trump when he was candidate Trump. I did support candidate Trump during the Ohio primary, and I've supported him ever since. So I'm one more vote, but also one more voice for Ohio where I can actually speak. I've been to the White House at least six or seven times in the last 7 months, which is something I can't say for the time I was here when President Obama was here. But I can be a voice for Ohio at the White House and continue to help move the president's policies forward.
We're talking with Jim Renacci, who is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. The May 7th primary is coming up quickly, and the filing deadline just occurred, and so officially he is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. Jim, we're going to turn a corner here and talk some of the social issues that are concerned to many voters as well. Many candidates say they're either pro-choice or pro-life. What is your position on the abortion issue?
Well, Chris, I have a record. In fact, I'm the only candidate in the primary and the general election that has a 100% pro-life record. I always use the words, I'm a faithful Catholic. There are a number of people who, you know, say they're a devout Catholic or they're a practicing Catholic. I think Nancy Pelosi has used that once. Vice President Biden has said, I'm a practicing Catholic. Nancy Pelosi said she's a devout Catholic. I'm sorry. I say I'm a faithful Catholic, and I have followed the Catholic doctrine. So I am 100% pro-life, but I'm the only one that has that record. In fact, one of the candidates in the Republican primary came out first in his first interview and said, I'm pro-choice. Now, he has retracted that, but I'm the only one that not only has said it, I've lived it, I've voted it, and I have the record.
One of the things that Congress announced when they were starting off with the Trump administration is the pledge to defund Planned Parenthood. Where are we in the process, Jim, currently of defunding Planned Parenthood? There's been some disappointment along those lines. Some of it, of course, is tied to Obamacare. But where are we in the process of actually defunding Planned Parenthood?
Well, Chris, I can tell you that I've supported and voted for every defunding bill for Planned Parenthood. So I'm a 100%. I have a 100% record of the bills to defund Planned Parenthood, supporting those, and I'll continue to do that. I think the answer is that the best defense against Planned Parenthood is having the states change some laws so that they do not have to use federal dollars for Planned Parenthood. But at this stage, I can tell you that I can only speak for myself. I have a record of supporting the defunding of Planned Parenthood continuously while I've been down here in Washington.
Well, there's some breaking news this afternoon that President Trump releases budget defunding Planned Parenthood. So there's obviously an effort is underway in Washington to do just that. The president has said repeatedly and pledged the defunding of Planned Parenthood, which is, of course, the nation's largest number one abortion provider, which infuriates many Americans that tax dollars are going to fund Planned Parenthood. Turning a corner, let's talk about religious liberty. And specifically here in Ohio, there is House Bill 160. It's dubbed a LGBTQ rights bill. But what it would do was actually give special rights to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer individuals, as LGBTQ indicates. What is your position on granting special rights to the LGBTQ community or individuals?
Well, look, I've always been a supporter of religious freedoms, will continue to be a supporter of religious freedoms, have fought for amendments for religious freedoms when some of these other rights have been brought to the table, because I believe we have to have the right of religious freedoms, and I'll continue to do that. I mean, again, whether it's here in Washington, you're always going to see me being a fighter for religious freedoms.
So specifically, when we see legislation like this in Ohio, which would grant, of course, special rights to a sexual behavior, in other words, in all estimations, but what, because it would be the Civil Rights Code, which would be public accommodation and housing and employment, you know, the supporters of the bill argue that there's some discrimination that exists, but your view as to, you know, there's religious folks are saying, hey, this would actually be an affront to me, what I believe, pertaining to the genders as, you know, that your gender is by birth. So what is your view on that? Because we're seeing, you know, certainly on the national level with the Trump administration, a rollback of the very aggressive, you know, homosexual and lesbian agenda under the Obama administration, but yet we see sometimes on the local level, the municipalities in the states, these bills, actually, this was getting a lot of noise because one of the big, I think it was Amazon, was considering coming to Ohio and still is, but the homosexual activists were saying, well, if it's not a homosexual or gay-friendly environment, the company shouldn't come if they don't pass this special rights bill. Your thoughts on that?
Well, what I've said all along, again, is that I have the Catholic. I'm a faithful Catholic. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm a big supporter of religious freedoms. I signed the amicus brief down here when it came to transgender bathrooms, against transgender bathrooms. I was a supporter of amendment against transgender bathrooms. So, again, you just have to look at my record, and you'll see in my record that I've always been pro-religious freedom, and I'll continue to do that.
Very good. We're talking with Jim Renacci, again, a candidate for U.S. Senate. He is the current congressman of the 16th Congressional District. Jim, some final thoughts then for your candidacy for the U.S. Senate. Obviously, you've laid out some very specific things that you want to see do. What are some other thoughts as you campaign for this office for Ohio?
Well, for your listeners, I want them to know that not only have I gotten the endorsement from every member of the Ohio delegation, including Senator Portman and Jim Jordan, but I've been endorsed across the state by the state and local parties, including last week I was endorsed by the Ohio Republican Party. But here's the most important thing. I've actually run two very difficult elections. I told you I entered the national political world because somebody took something away from me. I didn't have to run. I was a businessman. I stepped up because I didn't trust the individual who was running, and I won. 2 years later, I was redistricted into a very difficult race again, over $15 million spent in that race. And by the way, $15 million spent in the first race, which is unheard of in congressional races, and I won that second race. I would tell your listeners that I'm the only one who not only is 100% pro-life, not only fights for religious freedoms, not only believes, but also can say that I have won two very difficult fights against incumbent Democrats two cycles in a row. So I am also not only a fighter, but I'm a tested fighter. And I look forward to being the representative, the winner of the primary, and go forward and beat Sherrod Brown, who is a career politician who needs to be removed. He's a liberal. He's one of the three most liberal senators in the country. Ohio is not that liberal. I'm going to make sure that the people of Ohio understand that, and I want to have the opportunity to remove Sherrod Brown from that Senate seat.
Very good. Well, Jim, thank you for taking time to join us on our candidate spotlight today, and we wish you well in your endeavor for the candidacy. We're talking with Congressman Jim Renacci, who is the candidate for the U.S. Senate race. The May 7th primary is coming quickly. Jim, how can folks log on to find out more about your campaign? Where's your website?
JimRenacci.com. That's JimRenacci.com. And they'll be able to get onto my website.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jim.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Well, God bless. And again, folks, if you've missed any of this first part of our interview, please go to our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance, and there you'll be able to hear the interview in its entirety. We also will feature other candidates as well that we'll be having in a series that are running for office in the May primary. And then later in the year, of course, as the general election approaches. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back on the other side with another candidate who's running for the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
On March 8th and 9th, Cleveland Right to Life's nationally acclaimed Bringing America Back to Life convention will be held in Cleveland. This two-day event has become a touchstone, a point of renewal for the national pro-life movement. Join us to hear presenters such as much-loved blogger Matt Walsh, George Barna, whose books and research on cultural trends have positively impacted the nation, Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, whose vlogging shut down Teen Vogue's promiscuous print magazine, Walter Heyer, a former transgender whose sex change regret healing ministry reaches into 150 countries. These are a sample of the 20 presenters who will provide coverage of the full spectrum of life issues. Join us March 9th and 10th as we bring America back to life. Visit bringingamericabacktolife.org or call 440-503-8278. That's bringingamericabacktolife.org or 440-503-8278.
Okay, well, welcome back, and we're glad that you've joined us for this Candidate Spotlight edition of News in Focus. And this half hour, we're going to speak with Matt Lynch, who is running for the 11th District Court of Appeals. That covers the five counties of Lake, Geauga, Portage, Trumbull, and Ashtabula counties. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chris. Good afternoon. It's great to speak with you again.
Well, thank you for joining us today and taking some time out and sharing about your candidacy for the 11th District Court of Appeals. Now, many of our listeners remember, of course, that you served in the Ohio legislature as a state representative. Also, you've been a radio host on this station, and you're an attorney from the Lake County area. What made you decide to run for the Court of Appeals?
Well, you know, my father was an attorney. In fact, he practiced law at our offices out in the Chagrin area until he was 94 years old, actually. Passed away at age 97. And my dad used to always say that in every lawyer beats the heart of a judge. So every lawyer thinks about whether he should be the one on the other side of the bench when he's in the courtroom. And it's something, of course, that has crossed my mind before. And particularly when I spent time in Columbus in the legislature and saw the what some people refer to as the sausage-making process of making the law and passing the laws in Ohio. But it's up to the judges, of course, to ultimately interpret and apply the laws to individual cases. And often with some difficulties, as we see in the current situation in our country at all levels. The role of the judge is so critically important to maintaining our republic. We of course, see headlines all the time about what the Congress might be doing or what the Ohio legislature might be doing and what the governor might be doing. Not so much do we see headlines about what the courts do, and particularly the state courts. But the fact is that the state appellate courts particularly have tremendous influence over the lives of the residents of the state of Ohio, and it's an extremely important position. The 11th District Court has five judges that sit on that court. They sit in panels of three at a time and make decisions not only, obviously, in those individual cases that come to them, but they make decisions interpreting the rights of the parties and, therefore, by extension, the rights of all Ohioans. And that's a very significant thing to do, and something that I think I can bring a unique perspective to, having served in the legislature previously.
And as an attorney for many years as well. We're talking with Matt Lynch, who is a candidate for the Court of Appeals of the 11th District, again covering the counties of Lake, Geauga, Portage, Trumbull, and Ashtabula counties. I'm reading from the website here. It says the court consists of five judges who are all elected by popular vote, serving terms of 6 years. Each case on appeal is reviewed by a panel of three judges, one of whom is randomly assigned to write a decision after reviewing the record and the briefs filed in the case. The decisions, once released, can be appealed further to the Ohio Supreme Court. So if I understand this correctly, that someone has a case and then it goes to your court for appeal, and then to the Supreme Court? Is there any other courts along the way?
For the county courts, the common pleas courts, every decision that comes out of the common pleas court is subject to the right of appeal to the interim level at the appellate court. So in Geauga County, where I live, for instance, you would appeal to the 11th District, or any of those five counties you mentioned would appeal to the 11th District. And while it is true that a case can be appealed then to the Ohio Supreme Court, the reality is that it is very, very rare. Believe it or not, less than 1% of all the cases ever get to the Ohio Supreme Court. And that's because the Ohio Supreme Court chooses which cases it will hear. So you can ask them to hear your case, but in the vast majority of cases, the Ohio Supreme Court determines that the case is not significant enough for whatever reason, and therefore chooses not to hear it. And that means that for most people, the appellate court, the interim court, is the court of last resort. It's where you'll get your final decision in any individual case.
I happened to be at the Supreme Court yesterday. I don't often go there. I've actually never sat in a session of the state Supreme Court. I've been in their chambers when they've not been in session.
And that's quite a building, isn't it?
It is, and we, of course, pray for our justices who serve on the state Supreme Court. Some very important decisions came out this week. Of course, the majority voted against two abortion clinics, one in Toledo, one in Dayton, which were in violation of health codes and were closed down, thankfully. But I'm reading here a script that is outside of the court. I took a picture of this, and it says, "Education and morality constitute the force and majesty of free government." This is on the Ohio Supreme Court that is inscribed. Now, yesterday, of course, a case was heard of ECOT and the State Board of Education. And that case was heard yesterday as to whether it was constitutional for the Department of Education to make retroactive policy change with the school ECOT, which resulted in their mid-year closing, which is we've covered on this program, which is obviously a crisis. So this was a case that went through the appellate courts, and then the Supreme Court took it up. Now, let's play this scenario out a little bit. Now, of course, we don't know what the court's going to decide, and the deliberations were made yesterday. But as one justice told me, and I said, well, I don't think ECOT's going to fare very well at the court. He said, well, maybe, I don't think, he said, you might be surprised. He said, was it decided against at the appellate level? I said, yeah. Well, he said, then the court took it up, meaning they may have a differing opinion. Explain that process to us, Matt.
Well, that's exactly correct. If the Supreme Court, when considering whether or not to take up a case, believes that the lower court has acted correctly and there's no obvious error, then they need not take it up. And that's why the appellate court decisions are so important, because the effect of that is that that appellate court case decided in whatever matter it might be becomes precedent for all the other courts in the state of Ohio, all the other appellate courts and all the other lower courts. And therefore, the decisions of the appellate courts have ramifications far beyond even their own district, in this case the 11th district, which is five counties. A significant decision in any of the districts has an impact in all of the other counties of the state of Ohio. And again, if not taken up by the Supreme Court, while it's not controlling, as we say, in other words, another district could have a differing point of view, it is certainly has significant and weighs on those other appellate districts. When you have two districts that have differing decisions on similar legal points, that's when the Supreme Court is likely to take up the case, or if they think there's a significant constitutional issue, which was the case here in the ECOT decision, I believe, that they believe there's a significant constitutional issue that they want to address.
We're talking with Matt Lynch, who is a candidate for the Court of Appeals of the 11th District. He will be on the May primary ballot of May 7th, and you'll have a choice there. And then, of course, in November. There is a website that I've gone to here, Matt, is actually kind of helpful. In fact, folks can just Google the 11th, the Court of Appeals, 11th District of Ohio, and it comes right up. And then there's, the judges are listed, the administration, lots of information here. One of the things one of the links that's not working is court history. Tell us a little bit about the history of the Court of Appeals in the 11th District.
Well, the 11th District follows essentially the same geographic area as the Senate districts. That's how they're generally set up. And the 11th District actually has five judges. Currently, Judge Diane Grindel is retiring from that court, which is creating one of the two openings on the court. And you may have read recently that she has actually written to the legislature asking that the legislature consider getting rid of her seat. In other words, she's saying they really don't need five judges on that court. And that isn't an issue for my consideration. I'm not running for that seat, but one wonders whether there are sufficient caseload to require actually have five judges or not. It's a dilemma when you look at it, because actually some of these district courts, including the 11th District, take an extraordinarily long time to issue their decisions. I've had cases in every level of courts, common pleas, appellate, and even the Ohio Supreme Court. And in the 11th District Court, it is not unusual for you to wait as much as a year to get a decision out of that court. And one of the things I hope to bring to that court is a little sense of urgency about addressing the concerns of the parties and deciding those cases. You know, there's an old adage that justice delayed is justice denied, and I certainly agree with that.
Well, and the Constitution spells out speedy trial.
That's
and
right.
Yet we've seen the courts backlogged. I would have to say, we're always, of course, fiscal hawks when it comes to saving money, the taxpayers' money, but the courts are not an area I don't think, certainly we want them to use good judgment as how they're using court costs and fees and those kinds of things, but you know, they have enough personnel to carry the caseload, and you never know that the caseload may be low now, but it might increase in time. So I'm not so sure that getting rid of one of the five judges is a good idea, even though most cases are heard, as we read in the beginning of the description, a three-judge panel, of which one of the judges then will write the opinion. Is that correct?
That is correct. And you're also correct in that it may not be expeditious to get rid of the judges' seats, but if that's the case, if we have a full load of five judges there, we certainly should be handling those cases efficiently and so that the litigants can get their decision. Of course, it's those cases that go there are both civil cases and criminal cases and constitutional cases. And all of those cases are, you know, there's the significance to the community as a whole as to what getting some clarity in the law. But there's obviously significance and urgency for the parties themselves who are awaiting those decisions. So it's always important to look at any aspect of government, including the courts, to make sure they are operating efficiently. And that's something certainly I plan on giving my time and attention to once I take a seat on the 11th District Court of Appeals.
So someone is in common pleas court on a case, and they don't like the outcome, and they're going to take the time, attention, and even money to pay for an appeal on the case. So this could be anything from a land dispute to a criminal case to a
Absolutely.
Civil case. So it could be a variety of cases that could be appealed.
Could be
is that right?
Case. It could be a divorce case. Could be a criminal case. It's the entire spectrum of legal controversies potentially come to the Court of Appeals. Now, of course, most cases are not appealed in some ways, as you suggest, simply because of the cost of the appeal, and the cost primarily being the cost of having an attorney to bring that appeal. But nonetheless, many, many are appealed, and the courts have to be in a position to handle those efficiently. And you're right, all kinds of different cases. You know, one of my experiences has been having my own law office now for almost 35 years, hard for me to believe, is that we at Lynch & Lynch, you know, my father was an attorney, as I said, my brother's an attorney, my sister's an attorney, my niece and nephew are now lawyers. And so we have a broad spectrum of cases we've always looked at. And that's always been the case in my practice, that every kind of issue that you might imagine has come through our door, and therefore we've had to deal with. And it's very much the same as in the Court of Appeals, that there, you just don't know what exactly the cases might be, and you have to be prepared to study the briefs and offer an objective opinion. But always, always an objective opinion, which is seeking to come to a decision which is in line with the rights of the parties, and primarily, the Ohio and the U.S. Constitution. One of the frustrations you see at all levels today is judges' inclination to sort of whimsically pull and push on the Constitution to expand rights or contract rights in ways that were never intended by our founding fathers or even by the original writers of the Ohio Constitution. And that's something I think that's led to a lot of confusion among our citizens. We need to have strict adherence to what our Constitution says and the rights that they guarantee, and not drift off into our own whims about what judges think those rights should be.
We're talking with Matt Lynch, who is a candidate for the Court of Appeals in the 11th District, again covering five counties of Lake, Geauga, Portage, Trumbull, and Ashtabula counties. He is in a May primary. That's May 7th. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back on the other side. Don't go away.
On March 8th and 9th, Cleveland Right to Life's nationally acclaimed Bringing America Back to Life convention will be held in Cleveland. This two-day event has become a touchstone, a point of renewal for the national pro-life movement. Join us to hear presenters such as much-loved blogger Matt Walsh, George Barner, whose books and research on cultural trends have positively impacted the nation, Elizabeth Johnston, the activist mommy, whose vlogging shut down Teen Vogue's promiscuous print magazine, Walter Heyer, a former transgender whose sex change regret healing ministry reaches into 150 countries. These are a sample of the 20 presenters who will provide coverage of the full spectrum of life issues. Join us March 9th and 10th as we bring America back to life. Visit bringingamericabacktolife.org or call 440-503-8278. That's bringingamericabacktolife.org or 440-503-8278.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And welcome back to our candidate focus here on News and Focus. And we're going to be featuring candidates that are running for local office and statewide office. And we hope that you tell a friend. With us on the phone is Matt Lynch, who is running for the Court of Appeals in the 11th District. Again, covering the counties of Lake, Geauga, Portage, Trumbull, and Ashtabula counties. And he will be on the May 7th ballot. You know, Matt,
Chris,
you talked about...
I don't like to correct you, but I have to say it is May 8th, actually, not May 7th. So we don't want to have folks waiting 24 hours in line, so we better make sure they get there on May 8th.
May 8th, okay, very good. Thank you, Matt. I'm sorry about that. I don't know why I had the 7th in my head. But anyways, you talked about making the court more efficient. That the caseloads could move quicker. I'm noticing here an announcement on the website for the Court of Appeals where they have now gone to electronic version of the brief. And this is interesting because, you know, my family, we've done legal printing for years. My dad has since passed away, but my grandfather and my father and uncle, they did legal printing. So I remember the old legal sheets that we would print up and a variety of forms that both just folks off the street would buy, and of course lawyers would come in and buy legal briefs. So, you know, over the years, even at the Ohio legislature, now they've gone electronic. When you submit your testimony, it's done electronic, of course, with the computer age and the internet. Explain to us how this is going to be handled with the court now with they're going to an electronic version of the brief.
Well, we're a little late to the party in that regard, I'm afraid to say, the 11th District Court of Appeals. The federal courts have been doing their brief filing and really all filings electronically for some years now. And so it certainly will make things easier, more efficient. In fact, Chris, I remember when I was in the legislature when we started doing all the electronic filing and they were providing iPads to the members so that they could follow all their committee hearings and so forth on screen. And it certainly makes a lot of sense. If it's easier for the lawyers, it's easier for the judges, and it will help to speed things along, I have no doubt. And I would just say it's about time. But I don't know that in the end that was the problem or that is the problem when it comes to why cases take so long to get through the courts of appeals. The lawyers, when they would file their briefs on paper, those often would get converted to electronic form very quickly for review by the judges in any case. This is going to allow the filing to be more efficient, but it's the review process that I think is what's delaying things. So we'll see. We'll hope that that is an improvement of time, but we'll see.
Well, that's right. And, anything to help move the cases along because, again, these things can, like you said, justice delayed is justice denied, and things can be delayed for some time in the courts. What does cause the delay, in your opinion, Matt, and how can that be dealt with, or how can that be improved?
Well, it's very interesting because when you are in the court system as an attorney, you're painfully aware of the deadlines that are put upon you by the various courts. Every judge has his own set of personal rules for his courtroom. Every court has its own set of rules. And then, of course, we have the more general referred to as the civil rules. And they are full of time periods that lawyers must meet. And there are reasonable extensions granted for that those filings. But nonetheless, and particularly some judges are very strict about you meeting those time periods. And if you don't meet them, they're you have issues that can hurt your client. We don't have the same kind of rules and deadlines for the courts themselves. And while the Ohio Supreme Court has done a lot of good work trying to get dockets to be maintained and cases moved along, I think that's something ultimately the judges themselves have to impose those deadlines. If we're going to have a case that's submitted, that is, the briefs have been submitted, the oral arguments are over, then we should have a reasonable period of time to get that decision made. And it frankly shouldn't be a matter of 6, 9, 12 months. It should be a matter of, I would think, 90 days. But it's all under the really the decision of the individual judge who's writing that decision. As you pointed out, it's the three-judge panel makes a vote, but then one of those judges is going to write the decision, and that writing has to be done, and it has to be done on a timely basis if we want our litigants to get their decision.
Again, we're talking with Matt Lynch, who is a candidate for the Court of Appeals of the 11th District. The primary is May 8th, and Matt, give us your website so folks can follow your candidacy.
They can find more about Matt Lynch at mattlynch.com, simple enough, where there's information about myself and my family and my background. I don't know if it's been posted yet, but I just recently put up there a copy of the judicial oath, which I thought folks might find interesting, because the judicial oath in the state of Ohio, as in most states, requires the judge who's being sworn in give his allegiance to the U.S. Supreme Court and the Ohio Supreme Court. It's rather interesting, though, Chris. I thought you might find this interesting, that when you read the statute that provides for the oath, it does end with an oath to God, that you swear to Almighty God. But that oath is actually considered in parentheses in the statute, meaning that it is optional when a judge takes that oath. And I think that's unfortunate. I can assure you that when Matt Lynch takes his oath, and I've taken similar oaths in the legislature and even when I was a township trustee, but you can be assured that the oath to God will not be an option. It will actually be something I'll be swearing to the Almighty.
And if you'd like to contact Matt directly, you can do so also info@mattlynch.com. And the phone number also is 440-600-3734. Matt, thanks for being my guest today. Again, Matt Lynch, who is a candidate for the 11th
District
Court of
Appeals.
And
it actually covers the five counties in Northeast Ohio. Chris, thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and I'm sure I'll see you on the campaign trail.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt. God bless.
All right, Chris. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Again, that was Matt Lynch, who's running for the 11th District Court of Appeals, and that covers the counties of Lake, Geauga, Portage, and Trumbull, and Ashtabula counties. The primary is May 8th, and if you'd like to learn more about Matt's candidacy, you can do so at www.mattlynch.com. Well, those of you that are just tuning in, if you missed any of today's program, you can always go to our website at ohioca.org or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance, and you can hear the program in its entirety. First part of the program was candidate Jim Renacci running for the U.S. Senate, and our second part was with Matt Lynch running again for the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And we're going to have other candidates on the program as well. I will say that the Ohio Christian Alliance does not endorse or support any political party or candidate, but provide these candidate forums for educational purposes only. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and God bless, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.